This is a Beyond Casterbrews podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrews.com.
Christian Corley, he's Brian Terranova. Happy New Year to you. Happy New 2017 to you, dear listener. I hope you've had a good Christmas. Did you have a good Christmas, Brian?
I did, yes.
Excellent.
It was nice.
And did the...
Did you?
Well, I had quite a good Christmas here. I was going to ask you if the giant elf got you all of the things that you'd wanted.
It was a very nice Christmas. The giant elf was good, especially for a year that we didn't think was going to be so good. So the giant elf made us happy. Yeah, we'll say that.
Excellent. Did you get anything Doctor Who related?
I did get one thing. Two things. My brother got me a Christmas ornament for Doctor Who. As you and maybe the listeners may know, I have moved to Florida, so. One of the gifts was for the new tree down here, a Christmas ornament. It's on the Van Gogh painting, the Pandora Opens painting.
Ah.
It's a nice ornament. It's a nice little thing. And then my wife got me the Husbands of River Song Blu-ray, as it was a missing bit in my collection.
Ah, okay.
So you can see why I put that little tag on the end there.
Okay,
people might be going, what the hell is he doing with that story? But anyway, go on.
I got Risk, the Doctor Who Risk, the Dalek Invasion of Earth.
Oh, nice.
Which I'm yet to play. I've only just unwrapped it because it's been a busy few days. I got a few other bits and bobs that the listeners may be interested in. I got the recent Fawlty Towers remastered DVD box set, which has commentaries by John Cleese for every episode, which I'm really looking forward to watching.
Wow, geez, that's a lot.
I also got Cleese's autobiography / memoir. And I got a book all about Brian May's Red Special Guitar called Brian May's Red Special Guitar.
Well, what else would you call it?
Yeah, oh, indeed, yeah. For my birthday, because it was my birthday yesterday. Brian will know this. You may not, dear listener. That's okay. I wasn't expecting any cards from you. I got a Lego Volkswagen T1 camper van.
Is it just that it's cool Lego, or is there some other significance to this thing?
Well, it's cool Lego. Kerry and I kind of want a T1 at some point as well.
I see.
I'm hoping to kind of trade up at some point.
Gotcha. Okay.
I
was downing it. I just didn't understand it. You see.
Kerry got me a photograph of actually not a T1. I don't think it was a T1, but it was a very early days VW camper van for Christmas as well. So yeah.
Nice.
There you go. Yeah. So that's Christmas here. I hope you had a nice Christmas, dear listener, and that 2017 turns out to be even better for you than 2016. I don't hold any store with this whole 2016 was a disaster. Oh, it was so bad. Things were so bad. That sort of, it's a cycle around the sun. You can't assign, it's already got an arbitrary date to it. If you're going to start assigning sort of personality to 2016, you might as well start listening to horoscopes. It's just a number.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm the same.
Yeah.
There's no point.
No, exactly.
Really.
Yeah.
These things happen. And, a lot of sad things did happen, but I don't think that's any different than any other year. It's just, how to say it? Yeah, it was a good year for me in a lot of respects. And then there were a lot of sad things that happened in it as well. So I hold no ill will to this year. It's a year like any other.
Exactly. And it was a Christmas like any other. Oh, just feel the segue. Because we had a Doctor Who special. Hey, it was the...
So well done.
I thank you. The return of Dr. Mysterio. In which, well, you probably know
Doris
what happened.
Gets ripped.
You probably know what happened. I just want to throw a few stats out there before we start talking about it.
Go on.
Yeah, thanks. In the UK, it had 5.68 million viewers, making it the seventh most watched show on Christmas Day, which is kind of a big thing sort of on the day. Sevens is quite good. Top 10, top 20 is good. So it's comfortably in the top 10. 5.68 million views isn't great. I suspect, however, because as we're going to see in this podcast, there's a bit of a split about this episode. I suspect it's going to get probably about a third again on top, because I know that a lot of people didn't watch it on the night. I didn't watch it on the night. I was perhaps dreading it. I wouldn't say pleasantly surprised isn't the term, but I felt it certainly was nowhere near as bad as I feared it was going to be. The return of Dr. Mysterio also had an audience appreciation score of 82, which is by no means Dot2's highest, but certainly isn't its lowest ever either. So I think probably now I obviously I've spoken to Brian via email before the podcast, so I kind of have a vague idea, a clear idea, I suppose, of how he feels about this particular Dot Who episode. And hopefully we're going to be hearing from our very own James McLean later in this podcast. He couldn't make it right now because he is currently attending some Swish Society soiree in
Swish.
In deepest Norwich. So hopefully he'll be joining us live via satellite.
Nice.
So yeah, let's be honest, the return of Dr. Mysterio had a bit of a tough job in some ways an easy job, in other ways an easy job, in following the husbands of River Song.
Because, yeah, okay.
You know, sure. It could have been less well received than it was. It could have been, at the same time, it could have been really, really well received and, like, you know, headlines of an amazing return to form. Excuse me. For Doctor Who. There's, you know, there are websites out there and they are doing their job as Doctor Who fan sites, and they're being positive. Possibly they've been too positive in some situations, and it's not for me to say. I do feel, however, that it does deserve some critical attention, and that's kind of what we're hoping to do this evening. Although, of course, it might be in the middle of the night where you are, or first thing in the morning, lunchtime, afternoon, you know, timey-wimey. Don't worry about that. I'm doing all the talking because Brian's going to sort of like hit me with double barrels of that wasn't Doctor Who for me kind of talk.
Well, I believe, okay, if you want to hear what I actually said to Christian via email, it was, I think the kindest thing we can say on this podcast is to actually not talk about the story at all. So, you know, honestly, that's where I'm at right now. Okay. I can expand if you really want me to expand, because there's plenty to say.
Well, yeah, let's go with that for now. Let's go with that.
Oh, sure. All right. Well, hey, let's do that. Well, okay. Number one, the Doctor is lonely and he doesn't want to spend his life alone. He's afraid he's going to be alone. So he goes and he puts together a man who had his head severed from his body just so he's not lonely. Rather than, you know, go make friends like he's done, I don't know, for what, the past 50 some odd years? Because that makes sense. Let me just go put together this idiot guy and he'll be my friend. And look, Matt Lucas, that's his name, right? Matt Lucas?
Yep.
He's all right. As a one-off kind of thing in the show, fine. I can handle that. As a recurring character, being in all of Series 10, being in this Christmas special here, like, that just tanked the damn story alone. I'm sorry. But it really, you know, if Moffat was trying to make the show fail, all he had to do was just say Matt Lucas was back, as far as I'm concerned. But instead, what he then did was go ahead and give us possibly one of the worst superhero stories I've ever seen. And I got news for you. If I want to see a bad superhero story, I'm probably going to go watch a DC movie. Oh, speaking of which, when we were watching this, my wife, who hasn't watched any Doctor Who for about maybe 2, maybe 3 years now at this point, just been out of the loop. She likes the show, but she's been out of the loop. She just kept saying how contrived the story was, and the superhero angle going back to DC, she said, it's Batman Forever. they're doing the plot line from Batman Forever. The female character is in love with the male superhero character, but also in love with the male ordinary guy that she thinks is ordinary, who happens to turn out to be the superhero character. And if I'm being completely honest, and look, I want to say this. I want to pause for a second to say this, because the one thing I was saying to my wife the other day was, I love doing these podcasts with Christian and James. I really do. And I love Doctor Who, but they're getting old for me. The podcast, I'm getting upset with doing the podcast, because all it seems that we ever do anymore, or I ever do anymore, is down the show. And I don't want to be a negative person. I don't want to always down the show, but I can't sit here and say something positive about something that was so horrible to me. And, no, that's fair enough. When I say this, I feel completely awful saying this, but probably there was something in this episode worse than Moffat's writing, and it was the acting. Aside from a few, like Peter Capaldi, the acting was atrocious. And I don't know if it's because they were given horrible lines that nobody could say, like it was a George Lucas Star Wars prequel or something. And I'm sorry, everybody out there who liked it. I'm sorry, Moffat, because I'm sure you like it and you wrote it. I'm sorry, Peter Capaldi, because I want to freaking like your era of Doctor Who.
Okay. First of all, which one's Batman Forever?
Batman Forever is the one with Val Kilmer.
Right. Is that the one with Jim Carrey?
Oh, that I don't remember, actually. I believe, yes, it is.
Right. Is that the one with Arnie, then?
No, that's later.
Oh, right.
It's Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, it's Two-Face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen that once. So who's the romantic interest in that one, then?
The romantic interest is Nicole Kidman.
Ah, right.
Who is in love with both Bruce Wayne and Batman, right, and yes, comes to find out, oh my God, they're one and the same.
Yeah. Because in the interviews, in the interviews, Moffat was likening it more to the Superman movies, wasn't he? He was talking quite extensively about the first two Superman movies. Before Christmas, which obviously is a different situation, different scenario, and as you say, it's more close to Batman Forever. You mentioned the acting. I want to know what you thought of Alexander Jovanovich as Dr. Sim.
Yes, I thought that he was okay.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, there were a few actors in there that were fine, but I understand that Moffat was likening it more to Superman, because that's clear to see when you watch the story, especially the building this was all taking place in, with the Daily Planet logo, the only thing missing from the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
It had the globe and the banner around it. You know, it had basically the guy was Superman. Let me ask you this too, before I get any further. The doctor gives this kid this gem. The kid swallows it thinking it's a pill, you know, and he says he's a doctor. And I'll admit, I actually enjoyed the logic of that bit that the kid spewed out, saying like, that this is why I swallowed the thing. You know, I thought that was pretty good. Why didn't the doctor just make him throw it up instead of waiting 24 years to find out that it's permanently bonded to him? You know, he decides to wait for the kid to pass it, you know, in his poo, instead of just making him throw it up where he'd have it. The kid wouldn't be a superhero. None of this stuff would happen. We wouldn't be sitting here watching a story going, hey, where was the ghost when the angels invaded Manhattan? Where was the ghost when the Daleks invaded New York City? Where was the ghost during all of these New York-based stories for the past, I don't know. What's it been since the new series has been back? 11 years? Like, come on. This is awful. It's completely awful. There shouldn't be a superhero in Doctor Who. The Doctor practically already is a superhero. And he really kind of shouldn't be. He should be more kind of this ordinary guy that's just really smart, you know? And it didn't need to have that ghost character in there.
Okay, so we're distracting references we've mentioned. There's a list of these here. I want to just highlight them, because they're, depending on your knowledge of comics, these may, and superhero movies, these may or may not have been obvious to you. Superman's creators Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster are referenced as Miss Shuster and Miss Siegel. Grant has roughly the same standard of powers as Superman. And Harmony Scholes, as we said, has a Daily Planet-esque building to it. Grant prefers being called mild-mannered, as Superman's alter ego is often characterized. The special features a number of elements that mimic those from Richard Donner's Superman the movie, such as the ghost telling Lucy that he hopes it hasn't put her off journalism, as Superman does to Lois Lane, the helicopter sequence in Superman the movie. And Lucy Fletcher is named after Lois Lane's sister Lucy. Her character is similar to Lois's in that she does not realise that her old high school friend and current nanny is the superhero ghost. So, yeah, there's a lot of it in there. Just plastered on quite thickly, in case you're dim, or possibly someone more cynical might say, in order to pad out a rather dodgy script.
Indeed.
Now, for me, I've watched it twice.
For you.
I've watched it twice.
I'm so sorry for you, but go on.
And the first time I enjoyed it, I did have bad tidings, considering how I felt after the Husbands of Ever song. So I wasn't particularly keen on the idea of watching it on Christmas Day. And I actually, for the first time ever, I actually said I would rather be able to listen to it than be distracted by the children as a lie, rather than that being the truth. Because I didn't want to watch it on Christmas Day, and I ended up watching it on Boxing Day, I think, with Kerry, and she wasn't overly impressed with it. I think we had more fun the night before last watching Deadpool, most definitely. But I don't think this is a bad episode. If you were to say to me, you know, give it marks out of 10, I would probably be putting it in the 5 or 6 area. This is not, to me, something as bad as The Husbands of River Song. It is not a Time in the Rani or a, you will all know how I feel about New Earth. I would rather watch this than any of those that I've just mentioned. I absolutely admit this is not a great Doctor Who episode. It is, at best, an adequate Christmas special that falls short of doing anything other than giving the Doctor a seasonal adventure without ramming Christmas down our throats. I thought Peter Capaldi was superb. I do think it's a really weak script. I think the acting of particular people was good. I really enjoyed Dr. Sim. I think it was a shame that he was killed off rather than Mr. Brock, because I would like to see Alexander Jovanovich in Doctor Who again. I just love his kind of... Yeah, We do have a thing in Britain, and I suppose in America as well, about people with German accents playing bad guys. And, you know, he did the job. He was, you know, he's got a more of a Czech or Slavic name, so he probably isn't German. But he's got that Eastern European accent, and he was really menacing with very little effort. So I think it was a shame to kill the wrong guy, in my opinion.
I agree. He definitely would have been the better option to keep, especially since here's another kind of issue with this story, two issues that kind of were brought up just by you giving your pluses for it. Number one, this was a year without Doctor Who. The only thing we get this year is one Christmas special.
Yeah.
Which means that, you know, as far as writing goes, he didn't really have to tax himself that much to write a Doctor Who story this year, or to write multiple stories this year, or to write an entire season this year. He just had to write and take care of that one Christmas special at that time. You know, why, when you don't have an entire season, is the one story that you write so contrived and convoluted? You know, it's ridiculous. But also, here's the sad thing for me, is that it's clearly set up so that, you know, these things can return, the way that they showed that unit soldier at the end being one of them. You know, this isn't over, which tells me, like, if you wanted to do a setup story to get us hyped for season 10, for an ongoing storyline of season 10, which I'm hoping that this becomes an ongoing interesting storyline rather than just wrapped up in like the first 10 minutes of episode 1 of season 10, or even one episode of season 10. But if you're going to get us hyped, you need to write a story that is damn impressive, that's going to make us want to see more. Like right now, after seeing that Christmas special, when I saw that, I forgot his name already, but when I saw Dr. Sim go into that room, like, and there were all those brains in there with eyes and so on, of course it brought back memories to me for the Keys of Marinus. Mm-hmm. But I still thought, you know, this is a cool idea. I'm okay with this. This is not going bad. This aspect of the plot. But it just was poorly used. It was wasted in this particular story, and nothing of this story is making me excited to see season 10. I don't want to see Matt Lucas. I don't want to see these aliens back, because that means that, you know, the beginning story for these aliens is in one of the worst Doctor Who episodes I've ever seen. And unlike you, I don't give it a high rating or even a middle ground rating. I put it there with Love and Monsters, with one that I'm just not going to watch again.
Yeah.
The Husbands of River Song, I'm not going to watch it, you know. So it's a shame, like, to know that there was all this time wasted this year, and we waited an entire year since last Christmas just to see another episode. And it could have been a brilliant setup for series 10 to say, hey, you may have waited this long, but look what's coming. And it was just more of the same. It just wasn't worth it. It's a shame. So I'm not hyped, unfortunately. Even when I saw that unit guy, rather than do what the response should have been, which was, oh my God, he's one of them. Oh, this isn't over yet. My response was, oh shit, it's not over yet.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's sad. It's bad. And I'm not saying this to rag. And a lot of people are going to listen to this and they're just going to think I don't like Moffat and I'm going to rag. And you know what? Like, I love Peter Capaldi. I loved Heaven Sent. I loved the 50th anniversary. I loved all of Moffat's stories pretty much in all of Russell T. Davis's era. And he's had a couple of gems in there throughout Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi's era. I'm particularly fond of the Weeping Angel story from Series 5, which I've forgotten the name, which is sad. But anyway, Time of Angels.
Time of Angels, yeah.
Yeah, and a few others in there. There's just a lot that I don't like within there. And I don't know what's going to happen when season 10 comes around. As it is, I didn't even watch this on Christmas Day. I waited, what, 2-3 days later? And mm-hmm. I only did that because we were doing the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not me. Whenever Doctor Who used to air, I was there the moment that it was airing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I'm the same.
Sad.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to bring in our special correspondent.
Oh, it's that time.
It is that time already. Our special correspondent, James McLean, will be joining us live from a soiree in Norwich, in which he's he'll be telling us his own thoughts on the Doctor Who Christmas special. And here it is, James McLean.
Hello, sweetheart.
Hello. Hello, dear. welcome to the podcast with a K.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
We're talking, as you know, about the return of Doctor Mysterio. I've told the listeners that basically you are knee deep in some kind of society soiree in deep as Norwich, presumably with your butler handing out drinks and nibbles and those small things.
I'm in my small parish church at this moment, multi faith position. There are people downstairs. They are consuming. I will call them my butlers and, okay. On the arch, but not their faces. It's just considered rude around here.
Sure.
Anyway, so yes, you're talking about that show.
That show, Doctor Who, this Christmas special, The Return of Doctor Mysterio. Listen, now Brian and I have been talking at length about various aspects of this, and I do not want to go forcing you into, or forcing the listener into, so listening to another sort of, sorry, Brian, rant. So
I'm quite all right. It was definitely a rant.
So I'm going to throw a few things out there. First of all, there are deep similarities with Aliens of London, isn't there?
No.
It's essentially the same plot. The aliens have the same idea. They're already there. They're going to crash a spaceship, and then they're going to replace the various leaders. Obviously, they're not going to sell off the remains, but, you know, that part of it, they're already there and crashing a spaceship to fake an alien invasion when the invasion has already started. That aspect of it.
Yeah, no, if I'm totally honest, I had noticed that when I watched it. I was at that point, I was thinking, oh, this plan is unfolding. It sounds fairly interesting. And then my brain sort of said, hang on, I've heard this before. And I certainly had, as you said, in Aliens of London. But that was, to be honest, one of the better things of the episode. And that was probably because it borrowed it from somewhere else.
Something else, then.
So to your answer, yes. I think that it was okay, but it was a bit like Aliens of London. Yeah.
No, something, just to stay on a more a positive vibe, One of the things that Brian liked about the episode... The thing that Brian liked about the episode...
Yeah.
Was the little boy taking the tablet. The little boy taking the tablets. At the beginning.
Now that felt forced to me. I didn't like that.
Did you not like that? I'm with Brian with that. I did think that worked quite well. I thought it was a nice little sort of a nice little trick to play.
What, that he ate the tablet thinking it was...
Because the doctor told himself he's a doctor. I've watched it twice, so he says, take that, here's water.
He hands him a glass of water, he hands him what looks like a pill, and he says he's a doctor. I thought the logic of that kid was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, and he says, take this as well. The doctor says to him, take this, when he gives him the gem.
Yeah.
You see, my only issue with that was that when I saw him give him the pill, or give him the crystal, I didn't for a moment think it was edible. And it didn't look edible either. And it didn't look like a pill. It looked like a crystal. So I kind of felt, yeah, I see what you're doing here, but I think you're laboring to try and create this situation, especially with his vague coughs now and then. It just, it was a nice idea, but it didn't execute because there was not one moment until it became clear from how the doctor was saying how important this crystal was that the kid had actually swallowed it.
Yeah.
That was going to be the payoff. It was then I realized how they're going to do it. But the actual... I didn't feel there was enough. That crystal should have been like a tablet or something. It should have been something which looked like something more medicinal, more edible, than it actually did. So, yeah, I get your point. From a writing perspective, I think it was fine. I think the way it was executed was perhaps a little off, but it wasn't one of the issues of this. I mean, that could have been part of the story, and I wouldn't have brought it up in this podcast as a problem.
Okay. What about the flash...
Go on.
I was going to say, what about the flashbacks?
Right, the flashbacks. Which flashbacks are we talking about?
That is a sort of a flashback, I suppose, in places. There's the school one mainly.
And that was terrible as well. We got our first Christmas erection joke. I was like, oh, so what? No, it was the whole thing was, okay, I'll give you some of the good things, I think, in it. The first thing, as I said to you, I think on Facebook, I thought Matt Lucas was very good in it. I was really surprised. He was something we've all talked about, that we all thought was a bad move, and I actually really enjoyed him in it. I thought he was played for the just amount, right amount of humor, but he had relevance. You felt like he had a good reason to be there. You felt his dynamic would be different to what the doctors had before. So that looks like it's a really strong move. And that was, he was really the best thing there, and he did a great job. And he seems to work well with Capaldi, and I like this sort of almost butler-like approach to him. Brilliant. Alfred-like approach, I think some people have said. I think that was really good. I think the fact it was more accessible, which was something which I hadn't considered until Richard, one of our groups, brought this up, wasn't he? That it was more accessible for audiences. It wasn't like last year where it was horrendously convoluted around Doctor Who lore. You could go in, sit down with your family, and you could watch it, and you'd understand it. So that was good. Yeah? No?
Well, there is. I would agree with that, but that all falls down when you get to the last 5 minutes, and then everyone's whimpering on about Bloody River Song.
Well, yeah, well, that was ridiculous, and that shouldn't have been in there. And I still think that's him pushing fan buttons too much. He got away with his little bit for last year, which he knew was contentious with fans, the whole River Song thing. He didn't need to keep needling them this year with it. It just felt self-indulgent.
But of course, they had to explain why Matt Lucas was still alive, which is something that new fans tuning in wouldn't need to do if it was a new character.
Yeah, there's that as well. I mean, there were some things. The squeaky toy was quite nicely done. Unfortunately, again, it revolved around having the same trope of this woman who will dominate the position of the Doctor through her quirky, aggressive...
Squeaky toy?
I like the idea of the squeaky. I didn't like it in the sense that I didn't like it the way that it was using her. It was trying to overly big her up as something far more strong and dominating in this story than I felt she naturally needed to be.
Yeah, I thought the actual right mind would even sit there and give answers so that she doesn't quote hurt the squeaky toy.
It was just essentially I had not seen anything like that before. So to me, that was something that interested me. I'd be on everything else in that story didn't. So the squeaky toy to me, it irritated me. I didn't like the way that they tried to use it, as I say, to beef her up. But the actual act of it just felt like something a little fresh in a story which felt horrendously stale. And horrendously on Doctor Who. And this was something I was talking on the internets as an internet warrior today. One of the big issues I have, well, there's two big issues. The first of obviously is, as I think everyone has said, is whether the superhero thing was worth adding in there. Did it give anything new to superheroes, to the to people's notion of superheroes. What it was talking about has been done 40 years in popular culture, as well as being referenced within superhero genres. But what I found was really bad. One of the things I found was the whole thing of the nanny and the stalkerish element of the nanny, the way that this whole notion, which we get, as we say, a lot in rom-coms, where, you know, he is the nanny who has been following this girl, who adorates her, becomes her nanny. And then, you know, he just has to stay there long enough for her to realize that, silly her, she'd been in love with him all the time. She hadn't realized, you know, he's not a really good role model. And that I found very irritating. But what inherently was irritating about that was what it said about Doctor Who. And to me, where Doctor Who has always been, it's been a very British thing where it would sort of take a trope, or it would take a genre, or it would take a myth, and in some way it would subvert it. And in this, it didn't do that. You had the superhero myth exposed and laughed at a bit. You know, she couldn't see his secret identity through the glasses. She couldn't tell that he was really this character. You know, he really loved her, but he couldn't tell her because, you know, she was in love with his alter ego. You know, all these sort of things, which is... But the whole point of this surely was, and the Doctor tried to allude to it once, was that this is the stuff of comics. In reality, it doesn't work. And then we have the situation where it resolves, where it does work in reality, that he can be the superhero of the comics, that he can have his cake and he can eat it. You know, he can fly and be the superhero. And at the same time, he can still have the family. I mean, I know he sort of said he probably wouldn't, but we know he will. And so there was no statement on it. There was no reason behind it. So you had this divorced, really bad rom-com story, which dominated the thing, which told you nothing about Doctor as a hero. It told you nothing about superhero genres, had no relevance to the rather bland monsters who kept the guns in their heads for no reason whatsoever. Once I can understand it, but twice, why? You know, it's a reason people have holsters and they don't put them in their suitcases, because you have to undo your suitcase to get your gun out.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, it was just an absolute boring mess, and on so many levels. You could talk about it for ages.
Well, I mean, we have been, and we're going to continue to talk about it a little bit more. There's something I want to bring you in on, Brian mentioned this earlier. He didn't specifically name these, but I suspect this is what he was talking about. And you have mentioned it with the squeaky toy, but those scenes in between the action, such as it was, which is basically everything in the apartments. So you've got the Doctor, you've got Nadol, you've got Grant, and you've got Lucy. Now, as Brian was referring to these bits earlier, and he didn't do so explicitly, so this is kind of me doing this. But Brian was pretty clear that he didn't enjoy these pieces. And it struck me that they're very farcical. And it brings us all the way back to the beginning of Moffat's career and the sitcoms, specifically Joking Apart, where there is at least two episodes where you've got people pretending that they're not in, basically, which is basically what's going on here.
Yeah.
Or they're trying to be somewhere else. There's one where one of them's on a radio phone-in, but they're actually in the toilet. There's another one where there's one hiding under a bed while his ex-wife's getting amorous with her new husband. That sort of thing. And, you know, there's that whole, you know, that very farcical, that very farce nature of things, which Moffat was very good at. It's done so much better in Joking Apart than it could ever have hoped to have been done in the Return of Dr. Mysterio, which is a massive shame. Are you familiar with those sitcoms?
No, I mean this did feel like a first draft to me. It felt like a first draft idea that had been sort of tweaked up, but didn't really have anything that would make it special, even in those sort of contexts. It was predictable, wasn't it? Like I said, you know, we said this beforehand, you know, the superhero genre is something which has been mocked and ridiculed by popular culture and its own fan culture as well, and its own comics. You know, they reference this sort of joke. So these sort of, you know, the apartment, as you say, the sort of coming and going parodies, and, you know, he's not meant to be there and he is there. It wasn't anything new. If it had been done 25 years ago, maybe it would have actually scored something. But now... It was just flat, and there was just no real joke there. And again, there's that question: if he'd been an ugly man, would it have been particularly? Would it even been charming? If it was charming at all, would people have found it quite cute that he was playing these sort of silly games with her? In the, you know, if he was a big, you know, I don't know, considered whatever archetype of ugliness you want. I don't want to offend any groups, but, you know. Would he be seen as being creepy? And I don't know. You just expect more from Doctor Who than this.
Right.
You know, I'm also kind of sad. I thinking about the things in the apartment, it made me realize another thing. That they made a big deal about, like, when he forgot to wear his glasses. You know, like the whole Clark Kent, oh, if you don't wear your glasses, she's going to recognize you. But the ghost wore a mask, which was basically no better than the glasses. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. What did that serve? Like, it did.
But it didn't.
Things weren't thought through enough in the story.
I think also the whole lie factor, because again, that was the whole. Surely the whole point of what Doctor Who tends to do is ground, you know, sort of craziness with a certain bit of reality. You know, he had spent a lot of time lying to her. There was no repercussions for it. She just fell in love with him. There was no repercussions for the fact that he was leaving a baby alone while he was going to fight other things. There was no repercussions for it. These are all sort of things like Doctor Who sort of comments on genres and sort of tries to pick them up on them. And there was none of that there. There was none of that. It just played like a superhero comic with the Doctor looking vaguely confused through it, wondering why he was there. and I wonder why he was there half the time, because he wasn't needed most of it.
Well, yeah, there's an interesting. I'll be honest, I've been out of the loop with Doctor Who production things recently. I haven't been reading Doctor Who magazine for a couple of years. But Doctor Who's actually got a script editor. I don't know if you know this. Someone called Nick Lambon. No, I don't know if that's a nom de plume.
I was going to say, I wonder if that's a nom de plume for a certain someone, but.
Yeah, he isn't someone I'm familiar with, but he does exist, apparently. He's also worked on DCI Banks and also Holby City as a researcher. So Doctor Who's his third script editing gig. He also did the last six episodes of the previous series as well. So, listen... You will know, dear listener, that as you've been listening for such a long time to us ramble on about Doctor Who, that I tend to watch various episodes with my little boy, Bruce, who's five and a half, he will have you know, actually. And so I thought it would be a good experiment to watch the Return of Doctor Mysterio, not once, but twice. The first in normal circumstances alongside my wife, and the second with Bruce alongside me. Now, I will preface this with the fact that when we saw Rogue One about 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, he was extremely unhappy with the first 2 hours and insisted on playing games on my phone because he was bored and wanted to go home. It wasn't until the X-Wings and everything happened in Rogue One, the action at the end, you know, the last half hour, that he was interested. Okay, so, you know, keep that in mind. With the Return of Dr. Mysterio, we barely made it to the end, I'm afraid. This is a little boy who loves Doctor Who, loves the Doctor, and he was bored. Target audience right there.
Yeah. But I think that's the problem, because when, you know, kids go to watch Doctor Who, they're really going to watch Doctor Who. You know, I think I can't remember being a kid, but if you go to watch something specific, you're looking for certain specific things in there. And if they don't appear... Even if it's got other things that you might quite like, it's still frustrating because you've sat down to watch a show about the Doctor, and that almost felt like a backdoor pilot for a superhero show. where the doctor was there encouraging it along on its merry
let's stay away from class. Let's stay away from class.
I wasn't even going for class then, but I mean, it did feel like it was a backdoor pilot. That if this was an American show, I mean, Brian, especially, you know these. You know, you get the feeling when you get an episode where you think this is backdoor piloting something they want.
Yeah.
And usually the main character is there sort of in almost like a sort of in a sort of like a Mary Sue sort of paradigm. They're trying to sort of encourage the audience to think how amazing these main new guest characters are in a way that sort of pillars them above the main character. And it felt like it was doing that.
I just want to check if we have any cabin crew or aircraft staff listening. When James says backdoor pilot, he doesn't mean that.
No, I don't. No, I don't. I mean a show which is being that there is an intention of trying to make a new show, and they're using another show to sort of almost test run it, test run the idea to see whether there's enough interest there to actually move it into another show.
The thing is, he's not even a very good superhero, really. He's not charismatic. He's not engaging. He retreads all of those. He's absolutely generic. Most of the scenes that we see are things that we've seen from either Superman or the first run of Spider-Man movies.
I mean, he'd have been better off doing it that he was not interested in the girl, that perhaps he accidentally met the girl when he meets the doctor, that the girl is not is interested in the nanny, but is not interested in this sort of hyper-masculine character of the superhero. And they could have tried to subvert those expectations, which kids will have had as well, because they've seen all the recent superhero movies and they exist. That could have sort of subverted those expectations and done something a little different. It might still have been a bit boring, but at least it would have felt... Yeah?
No, I was going to say, or basically, like I said earlier in the podcast, James, when you weren't on here, the doctor could have just made him throw up the gem.
Yes, well, swift punch to his adult.
Heimlich maneuver.
All you need to do, just get that gem out before it had 24 years to bond to him. That's what an
it's
idea.
A very German
it's amazing
podcast,
I can think of
week.
That.
Yeah, no, you're right. I just like how a Teutonic... A sort of undercurrent to the podcast.
It needed to get rid of it by the end. There should have been no way that should have ended with him in the same position as he was at the beginning of that story.
No, you're absolutely right.
With the powers. That was a heinous mistake.
Yeah.
And,
listen.
Yeah.
I've offered a rating out of 10. Okay, and you've got to be absolutely honest. Now, I said I probably 5 or 6. I think following the Bruce viewing, I think it'd probably be a 5. I would rather watch it, as I said earlier, than things like Time and the Rani or New Earth. If there was a lineup of 3 and that was there alongside those 2, I would more than likely go for The Return of Dr. Mysterio. So probably 5, say 5 out of 10. Brian didn't offer a rating. I challenge him now to do so.
We have to choose between 1 and 10.
Yes, please try and keep it in positive numbers. Yes.
Oh, it gets a 1.
Okay. And Jim,
that's where I'm leaving it. Yeah,
I think I think I'd be forced to give it a 1. I would watch New Earth and Time of the Rani over that easily.
Absolutely agreed.
Okay,
absolutely on both of those. There's nothing I can think. Even the Wedded River Song one last year, I think was better than that.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
I would put that one at a 1 as well myself. To be honest.
So what you're basically saying is that you would give River Song 1.
That's what you're saying.
Thank you.
That's what Moffat has been saying since 2010.
Yeah.
Or 2008. 8, whenever she came into the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I did interrupt there. Sorry.
No. All I'm saying is that, you know, there are TV shows like, you know, when you're saying with this story that you would watch New Earth or Time in the Rani over this story, that's kind of suggesting that, like, whenever we do a rating, that there's always a story that is worse than the particular one we're giving, or always better. And that, to me, that's not the case. Like, I would put Love and Monsters, I would put the Husbands of River Song and this story all at an even 1 of things that were just going to go in a box that I'm going to wish the Doctor Who never produced. You know, whereas something like New Earth might be online with something like Time in the Rani for me, where it might be at a 4, maybe a 5, I don't know, where it's still watchable to me, but wish it was a little bit better, but it's not bad. You know,
you see, the problem with this one is that with Husbands of River Song, while I dislike River Song, I didn't like the ending. I thought the ending was very indulgent for his own personal canon. There was structure there. It wasn't a fantastic structure, but there was structure. There was a certain amount of originality there, which didn't really touch me. But I could see things which I would say, yeah, as a television show, just because I don't like it, I can't say, I can sort of say, I think as a show, it did what it was trying to do. But with this one, I don't think it managed to even do what it was trying to do, because it didn't subvert anything. It didn't really relate its genre stuff to its Doctor Who stuff. It didn't give you a good resolution to the characters there. And the characters were, you know, they lacked form. They were generic, yet they were being made real. And it was just a mess in every way. The only thing that works, they say, is that you could... It was easy for people to access, and I said that Matt Lucas was very good, but I can't really give Matt Lucas the win on that story. It doesn't seem right. The rest of it was a mess. Okay. All I can say is I think it proved to me that Matt Lucas could be a good thing for next season, next series, which is, I suppose, an up in itself.
Right. We need to kind of clarify ourselves now, I think. Because we have done this before, but I am aware that we have new listeners. We're not doing this podcast because we don't like Doctor Who or we have no affection for Doctor Who. We're not sat here discussing an episode and essentially ripping it to shreds because we don't like Doctor Who. We're doing this because all three of us, and you heard what Brian said earlier on in the podcast, all three of us feel that Doctor Who has been and should be better than this.
I like to use the football analogy. You follow a team has a really bad game. You don't try and pretend the team had a really good game. You say,
no, you don't.
The team performed badly. And that is considered to be absolutely fine. You can do that. But somehow when you go into fandoms, if you don't like a consistent run of bad shows from your opinion, like bad games for a team, you don't say you no longer support your team. In fact, you would be, if you did that in football, if you suddenly said, I'm no longer supporting the team because they've had a run of bad games, people would go, what the hell, where's your loyalty?
Yeah.
You don't do that. But in fandom, if you've had a run of ones that you've not enjoyed, then, you know, you're considered to be, you know, like you say, someone who shouldn't be talking about it. Why don't you go and do something else if you don't like this? Why don't you go and watch something else? It doesn't work like that.
No.
It's a loyalty thing and wanting it to do better than, you know, where your team is currently. So, yeah.
There are various facts to appreciate about this. But, we've gone through this so many times, particularly with... the 2015 series of Doctor Who, where there were episodes that were good, there were episodes that were bad, and we always felt that the episodes that were bad, that is not what Doctor Who should be doing. All right, try something new, but, you know, we are Doctor Who fans who have lived through the Russell T. Davies era, and we've also lived through the period of time when Doctor Who wasn't on air. And, you know, the Russell T. Davies era was considerably better than the era when it wasn't on the air. But,
yeah,
obviously. But that is a high point. Whether you personally like that era or not, the fact of the matter is ratings, popularity, and general awareness of Doctor Who was higher when Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant and Matt Smith were the Doctor. And the early half, this is sort of like the first half of Moffat's era. Don't lay any of the blame at Peter Capaldi's door, because he didn't cast himself. And while I feel that he's perfectly good as a Doctor, and I enjoy every single second of every single scene that he is in, because they are 99 times out of 100, he's the focus of the scene, whether he should be or not, he's not getting the material that a character, that an actor of his quality should be getting for half the time. This is another example of that. If you are watching Doctor Who and you are happy with Doctor Who, then I'm delighted for you. But if you don't think that Doctor Who should be better than that, then you really need to start watching other stuff, again, appreciation of other stuff, and maybe even go back and watch some classic Doctor Who or some noughties Doctor Who, and just have a good think about what Doctor Who is doing for you and whether that is enough. Because quite frankly, if you look at this critically, Doctor Who is not doing the job that we expect it to do. Doctor Who can be so much better than The Husbands of Riversong or The Return of Dr. Mysterio or 50% of what Stephen Moffat's era has produced so far.
Yeah, exactly what Davros said then. It was getting to that point. It was getting there. It was close.
It was an interesting inflection, that's for sure. I liked it, Christian. No, I agree. I absolutely 100% agree with you. And I do want to say, since I really kind of went on about the things that I didn't like, I absolutely agree with you. Peter Capaldi is a great doctor. I don't blame him. You know, he can only work with the material that he's given, but he's great. He shines on screen. I definitely, when Chibnall comes in to take over, I don't want to see a new doctor. I want to see Capaldi still there. And the one thing the Moth era has excelled at since day one has been its cinematography. Every episode just looks gorgeous, always, in this show. I don't think there's one I can think of that didn't look good. And that isn't to say that any episode of Doctor Who that came prior to that era didn't look good, but it's just amazing the difference that you can see in the Moff era. So there's good things, and I'm sure I could go through and like find other things here or there throughout this story, and I'm sure many others, but you know, I want it all to gel. I want it to be something that I want to rewatch again. And I think that's one of the joys for me about Doctor Who, is that it's a TV show that I watch endlessly over and over again, rather than just one time. So I want to get there again, you know?
They need to be more relaxed with Capaldi. They've got to let Capaldi do what I think Capaldi's good at, instead of trying to sort of keep doing this sub Matt Smith, Tom Baker thing with him, where he sort of comes across sometimes as this sort of slightly doddery, confused, crazy guy. They should let him do what he does. You know, Blackadder can be quite a harsh character, but because people know, they get the joke, it works. And, you know, if you've got the right sort of person, he can do it. I mean, one thing I did like is when he starts thinking that Clark Kent, that no one realizes that Clark Kent and Lois Lane, you know, the people know that he's Superman, which was a little forced, but it worked. It was slightly grumpy. It was slightly lightweight, but it wasn't this sort of contrived sort of, you know, I'm a crazy doctor that Matt Smith would do really well and David Tennant would do. He's a different sort of person, and they don't let him be that. And I think that's the shame, because he doesn't need to be sort of pigeonholed like that into the crazy, eccentric Tom Baker doctor. Let him be the sort of sarcastic, sort of slightly sardonic and angry doctor, you know, who likes people, and he would work. But like you say, that's not the problem here, is it? It's, you can have a silly story, but even a silly story, you should be able to see what the silly story is trying to do. But in this, I don't think you can. It doesn't do anything. And some of the effects were a bit ropey as well. Not that the effects ever bother me, especially from a Doctor Who fan's point of view. I'd be pretty hypocritical if they did. But his flying sequences look really poor. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
It's what we said before, isn't it? We'd like to be wrong about this. It's nice when you come in, because we all had little apprehensions about it before it aired. But it's nice when you're wrong. It's nice. I like that feeling. When I realized that Matt Lucas was going to be good, I liked that feeling. I liked being wrong there. I liked realizing that he was actually potentially a good casting here. And it's not about feeling that you want it to be bad. It's about you wanting it to be good and being disappointed when it doesn't. Yeah. Oh, 2016, eh? Huh.
That's an interesting loop round to the beginning of the podcast.
That really is.
So we will leave it there for you, dear listener. We hope to be back with you probably in about 7 days' time with more talk about Doctor Who. We'll probably go a bit retro. And maybe some other podcasts as well. We'll talk about it in a moment. But until then, very happy New Year to you. Bye-bye.